United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Margaret Bartley presiding. God bless the United States and this honorable court.
Good afternoon. I'm Judge Bartley, and I'm joined today via video conference by Judge Peach and Judge Falvey. We're here today for the matter of Richard C. Bareford versus Robert L. Wilkie, docket number 19-4633. And before us is the board's finding that Mr. Bareford is not a proper claimant entitled to request a government furnished headstone or marker under 38 U.S.C. 2306 and 38 CFR 38.600. Counsel for the parties, please state your name and your appearance for the record, beginning with appellant's counsel.
Jay Timkovich, representing Richard Bareford, the appellant.
Stephen Kinnaird, representing Mr. Bareford.
Thank you, Mr. Timkovich and Mr. Kinnaird. And Secretary's counsel?
Nathan Kirshner, representing the Secretary, Your Honor, and co-counsel is Deputy Chief Counsel Carolyn Wall.
Okay, great. Thank you. And I understand, Mr. Timkovich, you want to reserve time for rebuttal?
10 minutes, please. Thanks.
Okay, great. We will take care of that. And Mr. Timkovich, you may proceed when you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court. This appeal challenges VA's creation of an applicant restriction in relation to 38 U.S.C. Section 2306 A and B, which provides that the government will provide an appropriate burial or memorial headstone or marker for a deceased eligible veteran when requested. The question is whether VA's regulation 38 CFR 38.600 A1 and A2, which hereafter I'll call the regulation, conflicts with the statutes by limiting the pool of eligible applicants on behalf of the deceased veteran to the veteran's family and certain other narrow categories of requesters. We argue that the text, structure, history, and purpose of the statute dictate that the regulation should be held unlawful and set aside. Now, the operative text of the statute is short and clear. It says that the secretary shall furnish, when requested, an appropriate burial or memorial, headstone or marker, and that's it. There is no indication in the statute that an applicant restriction would be proper. In fact, the effect of the regulation is to create a disfavored class of veterans who don't have access to the statutory benefit. Now, this court has held twice in Davenport and Gardner that the secretary is not empowered to disguise the creation of additional statutory requirements in the guise of interpretive regulations. And that's exactly what happened here. The statute as written contains only two requirements. First, that the veteran be deceased. And second, that the benefit be requested on the veteran's behalf. The regulation creates a third requirement out of thin air, and that requirement is that the veteran must have an eligible requester on his or her behalf. This requirement is divorced from the language of the statute. Now, the secretary argues that the statute doesn't mention who may be a proper applicant, and therefore, the statute's ambiguous, and there's a gap for him to fill with regulation. Once again, this court faced the exact same arguments in Davenport and Gardner, and both times it rejected them. So because the secretary fails to distinguish these precedents, that should really be the end of the matter, and the regulation should be invalidated. Ultimately, the point is that the identity of the applicant is not salient here. It's not relevant to the statute. So there's no basis for VA to alter the scope and purpose of the statute with an applicant restriction. Now, there are structural reasons to indicate that there was no applicant restriction intended for 2306 A and B. If you look at 2306 E, which pertains to rules relating to outer burial receptacles at national cemeteries, there's a subsection 2306 E3A that I think is pertinent here. And I'll just sort of read it directly. It says, regulations or procedures may specify that an outer burial receptacle other than a grave liner be provided in lieu of a grave liner at the election of the survivors of the interred veteran. Now, there are a couple of points to make here. First, it's an express delegation of authority to the secretary to create rules. That express delegation is absent from 2306A or B, which is what's relevant here. And second, it mentions the wishes of the survivors of the interred veterans. They're allowed to make the choice in relation to this provision. Once again, there's no mention of family or appropriate applicants in 2306 A or B. It's an axiom of statutory construction that if text is present in one part of the statute but omitted from another part of the statute, that omission is intentional and it's not supposed to be there. So once again, that's a further reason to deduce that Congress not intend for there to be an applicant restriction for 2306 A and B. I believe also the history of the statute is important to be aware of here. 2306 A and B in some form has been around for well over 100 years since the post-Civil War period. It came about when, following the Civil War, there were hundreds of thousands of dead veterans across the nation, scattered all over the country. And so the government decided there should be some process by which a headstone or a memorial can be provided for those deceased soldiers. And so they came up with this criteria where someone has knowledge of where a soldier died and was buried. They could request an appropriate headstone for the Secretary of the Army to provide. And so this was how the statute has been carried out for decades. There was no applicant requirement. It wouldn't make sense for the family to be the only ones to request use of the statute, because oftentimes the soldier died hundreds of miles from where the family lived. They might not know what happened. The family themselves might have become deceased during the war. So it made sense that anyone could apply on behalf of the deceased veteran. And again, this went for decades, include veterans of all wars. And then in 1973, the act was transferred from the Army to effectuate to the National Cemeteries Administration, which is within VA. And that's where the modern language of the statute was first created, the broad "secretary shall furnish when requested" language. Again, there's no mention of a family restriction or any kind of restriction to who could be an applicant. This continued for a further few decades, throughout the 70s, 80s, 90s, and most of the 2000s. And as far as we know, there's no instance of abuse of the benefits. We're not aware of any problems that have occurred. So for the vast history of the statute, there's been no applicant restriction. And then, of course, in 2009 was the first rulemaking that resulted in applicant restriction being created. That 2009 rulemaking, we think, was defective in several respects. First of all, it was related to a completely different matter entirely. It was related to emblems of belief, which are what are etched on the headstone or marker. And the applicant restriction was sort of buried in the middle of that rulemaking. It seemed to escape any notice and comments from the public. No one mentioned it. It was not mentioned in the preamble of the rulemaking in the Federal Register. So, and we're not even sure that VA was aware of the new applicant restriction, because we believe that applications were still being processed following the new restriction by unrelated applicants for at least a couple of years afterwards. However, in 2012, we believe is when VA started really enforcing the applicant restriction and denying applications from people who were not related to the veteran. In this case, there were some outcry from stakeholders, people in the Remembrance community, people who said, hey, wait a second, why is my application being denied now? And following that, there were hearings in front of Congress because people wrote their congresspeople to complaint about this new restriction. In those hearings, Congress made it quite clear that this was not how the statute was intended to be effectuated. It wasn't supposed to shut out, you know, the vast majority of the U.S. population from requesting this benefit on behalf of deceased veterans. And, you know, VA sort of acknowledged that they needed to rewrite the rule, which they eventually did in 2016, but we believe is only a cosmetic rewrite at best, and there's still plenty of things wrong with it, most notably that it expanded the rule from next of kin into just family in general, which we think is pretty much just a cosmetic difference and still shuts out the vast majority of the interested public.
Mr. Timkovich, this is Judge Falvey. I want to ask you a question, some questions about the legislative history you just talked about. But before I do, what specifically, which statute, which provision of the statute, and which provision of the regulation is at issue here? It seems Mr. Bearford sought these headstones or this memorial marker under B1 and under the statute under B. I'm sorry, A2. You see my confusion. And under the statute B for memorial markers, yet the board looked at it under the headstone provisions, the grave headstone provisions. So which are we talking about, and does it make a difference?
Your Honor, you're absolutely right. Mr. Bearford did apply under 2306B, which relates to memorial markers. That's because the remains of the veterans who died in the hurricane are not available. It just means that, you know, the body is not available. Therefore, a memorial is appropriate. We think that VA and the board simply made a mistake by evaluating his application via the burial regulation, which is A1.
Okay, so that we should be looking at it, however, under A2.
That's right, Your Honor.
Okay.
However, to be perfectly clear, we believe that both regulations don't conform with the statute. It should be invalidated. But Mr. Okay. Bearford's application is under 2306B.
If how is it that he qualifies under A2, given that where he's seeking to place this marker doesn't meet the location requirement listed?
By location requirement, do you mean in 2306B or somewhere else?
Well, in let me get it open here. In B, it talks about for placement in a national cemetery, a veteran cemetery, or a state, local, or private cemetery. So that this marker is not to be placed in any of those types of locations. So he doesn't seem to meet the requirements for that either.
Your Honor, Mr. Bearford wishes to place the memorials at South Florida National Cemetery, which we believe does fit within the location requirements of B1. He did contact the Isla Mirada City Council, asking whether they would be interested in making the application on his behalf. It didn't end up going through. So his idea is not to place them at Isla Mirada at the monument. His idea is to place them at a cemetery.
Okay. Now my question about the legislative history is, if Congress was outraged, as you say, with VA's interpretation, VA's implementation of the statute, and pressed them to revise their regulation, isn't that an indication that Congress itself recognized that there was a gap for VA to fill, and that Congress was just unhappy with how it was filled and was pressing VA to change how they were filling it, rather than an indication that there was no gap at all. Do you see where I'm saying?
I think I do see what you're saying, and Congress certainly didn't say it in those words. Those are sort of like the legal words that we're using here, but they did say that the rule was not how the statute was intended. They said, you know, fix the rule.
And of course, that's not Congress saying that. It was actually individual congressmen.
Yes, that's true, but we do think that it's a good indication of what at least individual congressmen think. And, you know, we think that the statute as written is a perfectly good statute as written, and whether it's invalidation of the regulation or perhaps if the secretary wanted to write different regulations that actually conformed with the language of the statutes, we think that would also be an alternative that would work.
Right.
But the current formulation of the regulation, we think, does not conform to the statute, and the Congress people sort of indicated that.
Yeah, well, when you look at the language that you're really focused on here, that you're focused on, the when requested, is it your interpretation of that, is that use of the passive voice by Congress left the only possible, you know, subject, if you will, of the sentence to be anyone who requests, rather than some limitation on who may request?
That's right, Your Honor. We think it does indicate that anyone should be a proper requester. The important criterion is the fact that there was a request. It's not the identity of the requester.
Would that then be without any limit? No limitation at all as to who the identity of the requester?
As to identity, yes, I believe that there was no limitation that was intended.
So couldn't that lead to absurd results?
I'm glad you brought that up, because we think there are plenty of other guardrails, both within the statute and in other rules that.
Well, let's stick with this one. For example, is there any numerosity limitation? That when you say anyone, it's anyone without limit. 100,000 people could request a marker.
Your Honor, I believe that is something that could actually be debatable. I would note that there's an appropriateness criterion to the statute. It says there must be an appropriate government burial or memorial statute. And theoretically, within that appropriateness, perhaps it would be inappropriate for there to be duplicative requests or duplicative memorials. Again, that would have to be something that would require further development.
So first in time would be an appropriate limitation that the secretary placed in their regulation?
We do think that would be potentially appropriate, or perhaps giving family priority or something like that. Again, the important thing is that a memorial eventually be provided when requested. Within that sort of framework, there can be some regulation as to who gets priority, time frames, paperwork that must be collected, or the proper application forms. What we think is inappropriate is a regulation that simply shuts off a large number of potential applicants.
So you'd accept some limitations, just not these limitations.
You're right, Your Honor. There's probably a line somewhere. It's not exactly sure where it is, but we think that the current regulations are clearly on the wrong side of it.
Okay, thanks.
Now, we sort of discussed the purpose of the statute, and we think that there's an important point to be made here, that the purpose is for the secretary to provide memorials and headstones for deceased veterans, veterans who have earned those benefits through their service. We think that the secretary, through this regulation, has sort of tweaked the purpose of the statute to be a family benefit, and they mentioned that in the Federal Register in the 2016 rulemaking. And we think that that's just not sustainable. There's plenty of evidence to suggest that the benefit is meant to go to the veteran and not to the veteran's family exclusively. In the House and Senate reports for a 1958 amendment to the Act, it says right in the preamble, right in the first paragraph, The purpose of the bill is to commemorate certain deceased members of the armed forces. I already discussed the hearings before Congress in which they made it clear that the purpose was to provide memorials for veterans. And VA itself at the 2014 hearing acknowledged that congressional intent is to ensure that there are no unmarked graves of veterans. And of course, National Cemetery Administration's website says that their mission and purpose is that no veteran ever dies. And so with those indications of what the purpose of the statute is, which is to provide commemoration for deceased veterans, the regulation contravenes that by preventing that from happening simply because there's not an eligible requester on the veteran's behalf. And we think that that simply can't be how the statute should be read. You can imagine these hypotheticals where, say, a veteran, his family predeceases him and he doesn't have any family remaining. But he's got, say, a close friend, a comrade, a former service member that he worked with who wants to apply for a memorial on his behalf, and he would be turned away by this regulation. And we think that that simply shouldn't be something that happens. That would be an absurd result, not any of the results that the secretary mentions in his brief. And with that, I see I'm running low on time. If your honors have any questions relating to other aspects, like the arbitrary and capricious argument, I'm happy to stand on the brief with that. But if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them. Otherwise, I reserve the rest of my time.
Judge Peach, do you have any further questions? No. You don't. I'm taking your negative nod as no, you don't have any further questions. Okay, and Judge Falvey, do you have any further?
I do not. Thank you.
Okay, great. Well, thank you, Mr. Timkovich. And Mr. Kirshner, you may move ahead.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court. Your Honors, in this case, appellant has the best of intentions. Nevertheless, the court should uphold VA's regulations. Section 2306 leaves a gap, and the regulations are not arbitrary and capricious. The secretary is allowed to draw lines via regulation, and appellant's disagreement with those lines does not render them invalid.
Mr. Kirshner,
entitlement.
I'm intrigued here with your framing of this as a gap and not an additional restriction. Can you move to that part of your argument?
Sure thing, Your Honor. So the idea that there is a gap here, and this is not an additional restriction, actually can be found in the text of the statute itself. I'm sorry this didn't come out quite clearly in briefing, but if you look at 2306C, it discusses a class of persons, or refers to a class of persons, who are eligible to make an application for a headstone. So it says a headstone or marker furnished under subsection A, B, or D, which this would be, may be any material requested by the person entitled to request such a headstone or marker. The statute therefore lays down that that Congress had the idea of some class of persons who would be entitled to request headstones, and that therefore means a class of persons who may not be, or at least it's contemplated. But the statute does not provide any indication who those people are. So we have a gap in terms of deciding whom can make an application for a headstone or marker. Now that we have a gap and Chevron step one is satisfied, Your Honor, we can then move on to the regulations and discuss whether they appropriately fill that gap. And the secretary argues that they do. So looking at the regulations themselves, 38.600 A and B, nothing in them is arbitrary and capricious. Once we get to the point where there's a gap, we look at the regulation to see if it's arbitrary and capricious. And under sort of the State Farm standard, there just has to be a rational basis and a rational explanation between the facts found and the decision made by the secretary in his regulations. And I think that the proposed rule, certainly, and the final rule show quite a bit of explanation on all aspects of the regulations that were given. Appellant here had quite a bit of opportunity to participate and did participate extensively in the notice and comment that led to the current regulation. And the secretary provided reasonable and rational responses to all of his questions, as noted in the final rule. So really here, Your Honor, it seems there is a gap, and the secretary's regulations permissibly fill it. Furthermore, Your Honor, appellant noted in his opening, I just wanted to point out that he said that the secretary was attempting to impose a third requirement. And in that part of his argument, he used the word ineligible applicant. And that, again, is basically the same word that is used in 2306C, someone who is eligible to apply. So I think Congress has been aware that there would be a group of people who would be eligible to apply. And going back to the history of the statutes and regulations, even looking back to 1958, when Congress basically said, Secretary of the Army, we are going to put it on you to establish regulations relating to applications. And that happened. And as appellant noted, or showed the court in their brief, the Army did put forth those regulations and put forth the form, the appropriate form, the 1330. And even in that form, it says that if someone who is not the next of kin is making an application, they should ensure that they make every effort to have contacted the next of kin and tried to find them before making an application. Going back even to the article, the 2003 article from the National Archives that appellant put forth, one of the primary purposes for having headstones and memorial markers placed for veterans was not only to recognize service to the country, that is certainly a purpose, but also to give loved ones a place to mourn. That first statement from the quartermaster, I think it was from 1870, at the very head of the article, talks about giving a family a place to come and grieve. That sentiment that these memorial markers are a place for family to come runs throughout the statutory and regulatory history of this. And importantly, it is certainly not the only consideration, but it's an important consideration that the secretary noted, I believe, in the final rule, where they wanted to make sure that a family's wishes were being honored, even if those wishes included having no memorial marker at all. And one can certainly imagine a situation where a veteran passes away and is cremated. Their spouse holds onto their remains in an urn on the mantelpiece, and they did not want a marker. Their spouse does not want a marker. Their children do not want a marker. But once they have passed away, despite their desire to have no marker, to accept appellant's interpretation of the statute as mandating a marker when requested would allow someone to come in and request a marker for that veteran, even though they had an expressed desire that they did not want
one. Well, Mr. Kirshner, you have to admit, I hope, being familiar with family matters as I am, and as we all are, that it's certainly possible that allowing restricting this to next of kin could have the same result. That is, someone could put a veteran, could put a directive that when they are deceased, they either want or do not want a marker. And the family, perhaps a spouse who has some ill feeling towards the veteran or a child, would do the exact opposite. So certainly that kind of behavior that may be contrary to a veteran's wishes is not dimmed at all by the rules that are currently in place, because those kinds of conflicts could happen under the current rule as well.
They certainly could, Your Honor. However, when it comes to deciding under State Farm and under Chevron whether a regulation is arbitrary and capricious, it doesn't have to be perfect. It only has to be rational. And so if you look at the final rule, the Secretary even considered whether there should be an order of priority, for example, the surviving spouse and then the children, as exist in some other regulations. And the Secretary said that that would have been another substantive change and would require further notice and comment, and so did not act upon it. It wasn't for consideration. But here, what we have is a line that's been drawn, and it's an acceptable line. And I think that it's important to note that appellant has a lot of concern for veterans who are going unremembered, or he alleges are going unremembered. And the Secretary is very concerned about that, as has been, put forth again in the proposed and final rules. If you look at, for example, in the proposed rule, the Secretary noted the work done by the Missing in America Project, which is a group of people who got together and organized to ensure graves were marked. And the Secretary thanked them for doing that work and promulgated these new regulations, the current regulations, in an effort to sort of fill that gap that was left in the initial regulation. I think opposing counsel talked about the 2009 regulation. Now, the current regulation covers a lot of ground, and there are a lot of ways for folks who don't have families. One thinks of, the battle buddies that appellant represented or discussed. One thinks of homeless veterans, for them to obtain a marker. So here we have not only family members, we have personal representatives, we have representatives of a congressionally recognized VSO. So if the veteran had been a member of the American Legion or something, the Legion could request one on their behalf. State or county veteran service officers. So if the state or county was aware of them and involved with them, they could make a request on their behalf. Those persons who are employed by a local government responsible for the disposition of unclaimed remains. One can imagine a situation, unfortunately, where a veteran would die at a hospital without any of those contacts and without next of kin or family, because, of course, even a family member is a broader standard than next of kin. And at that point, those employed by the local government responsible for the disposition of unclaimed remains would be able to make that application. And then, of course, if the veteran passed away prior to the beginning of World War I or U.S.'s entry into World War I, then any person could make that request. But the explanations given in the final rule to the Secretary are in depth. There's nothing really arbitrary about them. And they directly addressed appellant's concerns. Appellant made several complaints, and that's acknowledged in the record. But the Secretary addressed those and when he published his final rule. So I think in terms of whether the regulation is arbitrary and capricious, the court should certainly find that it's not, because it's reasonable and rational.
Now, as to your absurd results argument, given that this rule was in existence, I think, for around over 100 years without any restrictions, why would you argue now that no restrictions would be an absurd result? It's rationally, trying to connect dots. It's hard to connect that dot.
Sure, Your Honor. Well, a few reasons. First of all, things have changed quite a bit. Appellant discussed earlier in the argument the situation that was described in the National Archives article. At the end of the Civil War, there were some 300,000 dead that needed to be buried. It took probably weeks for communication to go from one end of the country to the other, or maybe slightly less than that with rail service and things like that. But it's important to make sure that veterans, are being buried in a timely manner. So I don't think in 1870 they were terribly. I don't think they were wanting to wait 6 weeks to see what the family would want to do. But the purpose to have a marker was always to give the family a place to go to remember their loved one, even at that time, a place to memorialize them. And so as sort of technology has moved on, we have in 1958 a different story where the Secretary of the Army has been given direct authority to promulgate regulations and does so and promulgates the 1330, which talks about how if you're not next of kin, you should ask them, try to find them and ask them what they would like done. And then after that, you have the addition of, 2306C into the statute later on. I think it came in around 1980 or 1982, which talks about those who are eligible to apply. So there's always been some idea that there's going to be a group of people who are eligible for this. Congress seems to have left it first to the Secretary of the Army and then to Secretary of VA to kind of decide who those are. And the current regulation, it really strikes a balance between giving the veteran the benefit to which they're entitled, because it is the veteran who is entitled to this memorial marker, not the family and not the country. It belongs to the veteran, but while respecting the veteran's wishes and the family's wishes. Now, I mean, even looking at, for example, the personal representative, it's 38.600A2, one can easily see a situation where, a fellow veteran or a battle buddy could be listed as the personal representative. I want my friend who I served with to decide how I'm going to be memorialized. And so that is an option that, at the time when a veteran passes away. Now, going back to 1870, we don't have the same circumstances as we do in 1870. Now we have the internet and public death notices. Someone could be arguably trolling death notices to see when folks pass away. And if they notice a veteran passes away, they could submit an application, that same day, taking precedence over basically any of these categories listed, if the court would go along with appellant's interpretation. Appellant's use of the term race to the graveyard race to the cemetery in his reply brief only really would happen if the court agrees with his interpretation. But the court doesn't need to do that, because here we have a statute with a gap and we have the Secretary's regulations, which are reasonable and rational.
Counselor, can you hear me?
Yes, Your Honor.
The statute has two sections to it, the statute we're talking about. One has to deal with requests for headstones. The second portion deals with requests for memorial markers. Now, my question is, with respect to the headstone markers, any number of these people could request that headstone. How many headstones can be requested under the first section? One?
I'm not sure. The section doesn't give a limitation there, but I believe there are other regulations that limit the request to one headstone.
Okay, and that's one per the veteran, not one per the request. It's about the
veteran. Correct, Your Honor. I believe so.
And now with respect to the second portion, where there are no remains, and the rationale for only family members requesting it is the memorial, a place to gather. Is it possible for, say, in a situation where we have a mother and father who have lost their child, don't get the remains, and that they're separated, living on opposite ends of the country, even to request a memorial? Who would get it? If it's one per veteran.
That is an excellent question, Your Honor. I don't know the response to that. I believe it would be, again, the first to request it. The secretary, did not discuss that possibility in the proposed rule. I think, the National Cemetery Administration is really trying to provide the service to veterans and their families, and they are meeting these folks at their worst moment when a loved one has passed away. So I think that, the idea of these sort of battles over how someone is going to be memorialized just hasn't really been thought of in that regard. And so again, Your Honor, the regulation is not perfect, but what it is rational and reasonable, and therefore it's not arbitrary and capricious.
I do have a second question as well. When the board received this application from the appellant, why did they analyze this under the burial headstone versus the memorial headstone? When they got to the fork in the road as to whether it should be a burial headstone or if this was an application from a memorial for a memorial headstone, why did they choose the path to go down that they did?
Your Honor, I'm really not sure. I can't speculate as to why the board chose one or the other. I think what's important, though, in this case is it's not abundantly clear from the record what kind of a marker appellant is requesting here for Mr. Anderson. Because initially, when we go to his letter to the Isla Morada Village Council, he is requesting 166 flat headstones to be placed at the Isla Morada Memorial for veterans. Then later on, I believe it's in something that he submitted along with his Form 9, he sent a letter to someone at the National Cemetery Administration where he was requesting headstones for 41 veterans who he believed were interred at the Isla Morada Memorial. The Isla Morada Memorial is dedicated to veterans and civilians who perished in that hurricane, and it contains cremated remains from many veterans. So throughout this whole process, it's not really clear from appellant's application, which is at record at 79, the claim form, whether he's requesting a memorial marker or a headstoner marker. Either way, the relief he's requesting is not simply for VA to put down a marker for this veteran. The relief he's requesting is invalidation of the regulation. So it really, regardless of which way he's requesting it, what appellant wants is for 38.600 to be stricken, and any limitation on who may request a headstone or marker to be stricken. Appellant says that, said in his argument that, he imagines some restriction might be appropriate, but these restrictions are not them. But again, looking back at the text, especially about the headstones, 38600A1, Romanet 1 through 6, it covers quite a bit of ground. There are quite a lot of ways that persons not related to a veteran can request a headstone for a veteran and appropriately memorialize them. So really, again, it just comes back to the secretary's regulation doesn't have to be perfect. It just has to be reasonable and rational, and it is that.
Thank you.
Judge Falvey, your mic is off.
I'm sorry. Of course, you can only rely on 1 through 6 if you're talking about a headstone at a burial site, so you need the actual physical burial site to put the markers at. Yet, if you want to memorialize someone and you don't have access to the grave site, you have to be a family member.
And that's a slightly different consideration too, Your Honor, because I don't know that it's a question of having access to the gravesite. It's a question of having access to the remains. So again, because it's not particularly clear whether appellant wants a headstone or a headstone that would go with cremated remains for Mr. Anderson or a memorial marker, that brings that kind of into question. I believe if there are cremated remains that are available, and so one could argue that the Isla Morada memorial that contains the cremated remains, the remains are available, then what VA would provide is a headstone or marker as close as possible to those remains. A memorial marker is something different. It's not for cremated remains that are available. It's in a situation when there are no remains available, when, you know, the body is lost at sea or something like that. And so because it's not clear.
But they're also unavailable if they're unidentified. So in a mass grave with unidentified remains, and we don't know if the veteran in question here are actually in that grave. We just know that there are remains there, right?
It's unclear, Your Honor. Again, that would be something that I would hope appellant would clarify or could clarify maybe in rebuttal. But when there's the possibility of cremated remains, then the headstone would be the one that we would apply the headstone regulation.
Thank you.
Counsel, a couple of questions again. So effectively, the veteran in this case would have no marker at all, other than what is at the Florida site. So this veteran would never have either a marker memorial or a burial headstone. At this point, that's the effect. That's the
no, Your Honor.
This whole thing, that's the consequences that we have right now.
No, Your Honor, I'm sorry if I may interrupt. And I beg the court's indulgence in doing so. I don't think that's the case at all. There's no reason for Mr. Anderson not to have some kind of marker under these regulations.
Well, if Anderson, go ahead.
Pardon me, Your Honor.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Mr. Anderson is the veteran, Your Honor, in the claim. What we have here is a situation where appellant is not the appropriate person to do the request. If appellant were to go and volunteer with a VSO and make a request in that capacity, he certainly could do so. If he were to go volunteer or work for the village of Isla Morada, who is responsible for the disposition of the remains, he certainly could make a request in that capacity. There are several ways that appellant could obtain the capacity to make these requests.
Aren't we kind of mixing apples and oranges here? I thought this was the case of no available remains. Therefore, it would be a memorial marker. So what is all this about all these other people being able to make an application?
I believe I had seen in the record, Your Honor, that the remains had been cremated, but, you know, either way, Your Honor, even if this is a case where there are no remains available, and instead of the headstone, which appears to be what appellant has been seeking since September of 2016, is a headstone, even if the case, even if it were the case where appellant was seeking a memorial marker and not a headstone, the extra care and concern for the families of the deceased that the secretary expresses in the proposed rule and the final rule, where the request for a memorial headstone is more limited, or a memorial marker is more limited than a burial headstone, it is still a rational basis that has its basis in the statute and its finding and its genesis in the history of the statute. Looking back to 1958 again, you know, it was discussed about how important it is to give the family a place to remember those who passed. So this solicitousness is not something that comes out of thin air. It's been around throughout the whole history. And I think it's at least a rational basis for the distinction between a memorial marker and a burial headstone or marker. And with that, I'm running low on my time.
We do have one more question I could ask you. With respect to the physical...
Judge Peach, just before you start, Don, would you please add another 2 minutes?
Thank you, Chief. With respect to the physical marker headstone, is there a difference for... is a headstone for a burial different from the, quote, marker for a memorial? Or can I get... is it the same, like, granite slab or this large... a cross, or for the memorial, is it just a little medallion? I mean, is there a difference between the two?
Yes, Your Honor. If I believe there's a difference. There's a medallion can be placed when there's already a marked grave. And a memorial marker, I believe, is akin to a headstone, and it's placed in a cemetery in a space that's reserved for those whose remains are unavailable. So where there are no remains or there's no body.
So in a space in a cemetery that's reserved for veterans who have there are no remains for the veteran for whatever reason, that would be where this marker would go.
If this was the kind of marker that was requested, then yes, it would be in a national cemetery, I believe. Or a cemetery under, you know, where VA could put it. And it would look like a gravestone. But again, pardon me, Your Honor, this is a little bit outside of my familiarity with the regulations, the specifics on the types of markers. And if you want further information later, I'm happy to provide.
Well, I guess what I was trying to get to is the reasons for changing what had been an established procedure that anybody with knowledge of the veteran where the remains were unavailable up until 2009, anybody could apply for it. And then all of a sudden it's changed. And I'm trying to get a grasp on what the reason for. Is it economics? Is it administrative? Other than to say that this is about family who want to have a place together at some point.
Don, would you please add 3 more minutes? Thank you.
Thank you, Chief. So that's what I was trying to get to, is, you know, to delve into the reasons for this change of a tradition, of a process that has been in place up until 2009, less than 12 years ago.
Thank you, Your Honor. I do not know the reason off the top of my head for why the regulation came into being in 2009 in the fashion it was at that time. But the secretary was aware that next of, or became aware that next of kin was too restrictive in terms of at least for the burial markers, and undertook these current regulations to remedy that problem. And so that's the basis for these regulations and the basis for the distinction between the two. There was a time in Congress in 1958, again, when Congress was discussing the statute that they were going to put forward, I believe Congress discussed including next of kin at that time and limiting to next of kin, but ultimately decided not to. And that was at the request of the Secretary of the Army, because they didn't want to limit requests at that time to only next of kin. But they wanted to give the Army, nevertheless, discretion as to who could make an application. And the Army did so, and now VA has done so. And again, I think you'll find that I do believe both 600A, 1 and A2, even A2, family of the deceased is a broader category than next of kin. So both of these current regulations, as they exist, allow greater than next of kin to make a request for either a burial headstone or a memorial marker.
Thank you.
If there are no further questions, the secretary urges the court to uphold the secretary's regulation because there's a gap in the statute. The regulation is not arbitrary and capricious because it is rational, not contrary to the statute, and reasonable. The secretary therefore requests that the board affirm the board's decision, or the court affirm the board's decision. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kirshner. And Mr. Timkovich, you may move ahead with rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. There are a few points I'd like to make. First, Mr. Bereford was clear on his Form 9 application that this was for memorial markers and not burial markers. So the regulation most at issue here is the memorial regulation, which, as Your Honors have noted, is restricted only to families. And so in that case, the Secretary mentions all the other alternatives in the burial regulation, which we still think are not sufficient alternatives, but in any event, those are not available for memorial markers. And we do think that Mr. Anderson and the other victims of the hurricane whose families are either gone or can't be found, they do not have recourse under the memorial regulation. Second, the Secretary references 2306C, which he says contains an applicant's eligibility section there. And it says person entitled to request such a headstone, not eligibility. And we think that relates to 2306D, which specifies that the applicant must certify to the secretary that the marker or headstone will be placed in the appropriate spot. So we don't think that it relates back to A and B applicant identity. We think this relates to when the application has already been processed and approved, then the applicant is entitled to the headstone or marker. Now, as for his arguments relating to arbitrary and capriciousness, I do think this has to be mentioned. That the applicant restriction for both burial and memorial, but especially memorial, disfavors veterans who have no families or are estranged from their families, and they don't have any recourse to receive the memorial that they're entitled to. And this line simply must be arbitrary because it creates a division where none should exist. And, you know, Congress members mentioned that explicitly in the hearings in 2013, 2014, how homelessness among veterans can be a big problem, and that this restriction certainly penalizes them more than others. Second, there's no real explanation for why the burial regulation should be different from the memorial regulation. There's something about how family might want to congregate at a memorial, but why would they not want to congregate at a burial marker? It simply doesn't make any sense. They should be treated alike, and the more restricted memorial regulation seems arbitrary. I may have mentioned this earlier, but the 2009 regulation was created without giving fair notice and comments, and that should deny its the force of law as well. And I'm not sure if there are any more things I need to mention. Oh, yes. The secretary mentions the mentions of families who will benefit from the regulation in certain legislative history from the 50s. Well, we of course agree that families are going to take advantage of the 2306 A and B benefits more than anyone else. They're a major constituency of it. And we certainly hope that families receive solace from the provision of a memorial or a headstone. However, it doesn't say anywhere that families are the exclusive beneficiary of the statute. And, you know, there's an aspect of civic health to memorials and headstones where people can see that someone served their country and sort of contemplate that sacrifice. Obviously, there are people who can be close to the veteran who aren't families. So we think that that's really a myopic view of the statute. Unless your honors have any further questions, I guess I'm going to wrap up. My client requests.
Yes, I have a question. You know, Mr. Barefoot has been pursuing this for quite a while and has been very active. I saw in the rulemaking process. And also, you had mentioned that that there may have been lapses in the notification process under the rulemaking procedures. So my question is, why Mr. Barefoot did not pursue this through the Fed Circuit as a improper rulemaking or to attack the rules themselves?
Your Honor, I believe that either court's jurisdiction would have been appropriate. He preferred to appeal the denial of his application by the BBA to this court. Both courts have obviously the power to hold unlawful and set aside regulations that are contrary to statute. So we chose to file in this court.
Thank you. No other questions.
And Judge Falvey, do you have any further questions?
I do not. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Timkovich. And the court thanks both parties for their arguments. And the case is submitted.
And the court is in recess.